Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right, welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim, and our guest today is Aaron. So Aaron, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
Sure. I live in Vancouver, Canada, and I am the founder of something called the DAS Group. And one of our most active companies is DAS Services. So we use AI and automation to give companies more customers, profits, and time.
Awesome. So can you share with me just how you got the idea for starting this company?
Sure. Yeah. So for 7 years, I ran a company called Strategy Box, which was a large data management platform. So we manage billions of points of data for large advertising agencies, banks, financial service firms, that kind of thing. And we did on kind of layered on top of that was AI and machine learning that would help companies kind of determine, you know, like what ads to run or like, hey, here's how to save some money. I got early access to ChatGPT. Are we allowed to swear on this podcast?
Yes.
I realized I was fucked and I had to kind of rapidly figure out how to integrate what is a, you know, life-changing or generational technology into what we were doing. And through some twists and turns, shut Strategy Box down and then got the idea for DAS Services, where it was like, oh, hey, companies are going to need to figure out how to use this technology. Why don't we make it really easy for them to do that? And kind of how I discovered that this would be, you know, generative AI and automation would be so important was, you know, I had early access to ChatGPT. I started, and the challenge I always had previously with any sort of AI is, you know, I had a full data team. I had data scientists, I had engineers, I had, you know, access to kind of everything that I needed. And it would still take 3 months to get a very simple answer out of a set of data that we had. I did a customer profitability analysis using ChatGPT, you know, didn't get all the way, it got to 80% kind of the way there, but I did it in 45 minutes. And I did it with a couple tables I uploaded to ChatGPT, and that was it. And then the kind of aha moment for me was I finished that task and I was like, shit, this is pretty valuable. And then I had a roast chicken in the fridge and I do meal planning every week. So I was like, oh, I gotta like do some meal planning. And I just wrote like, hey, you know, ChatGPT, plan my next week's meals. And one of the recipes have a roast chicken. And I literally got a meal plan for that. And that's actually when I said, oh, we're fucked, in the sense of like, oh, I got to get into this. So yeah, I credit a roast chicken with launching me into DAS Services.
Awesome. So can you just tell me, like, as of now, an example of a current customer use case, like how somebody's using it without actually, you don't have to mention the actual customer, but yeah, just to give us an idea.
Well, I'll give you a few. So like right now, we have a pretty diverse customer base. You know, Queen Charlotte Lodge is a client of ours. They're a luxury fishing lodge. So up in Canada, the Queen Charlotte Islands are this incredibly beautiful place. They obviously, the clients get flown in from all over the world. They come up there, they catch salmon, they catch halibut. And then obviously you want to take that catch home with you. Right now, that process is entirely paper-based, or I should say it was paper-based. So it's like you catch a few hundred pounds of fish, you getting it back home, you're filling chits out, the company's handling like literally stuff in triplicate. Like, and so what we were able to do is automate all that. So now they have what's called a fish concierge. So this fish concierge has an iPad, takes all the guest information in, scans a credit card, and then all the reports, all the what used to be paper, just gets either emailed or displayed in a report to the right person. And they ship more fish. So the cool thing is way less waste, way less time, way more like ability to catch cash faster because you can charge a credit card faster because they're not having to wait for a manual paper report. So that's one end. And then on the other end is, you know, a property management and real estate development company. Like, well, In this case, I'll give you right now, they're a construction company called Etro, Etro Construction, one of the Vancouver, where I live, one of the larger construction companies in the city. And they build like condo towers and stuff like that. And what is a super interesting application we have there is they have a lot of manual processes. If you can imagine, you're building something like a 40-story condo tower, you're using hundreds, if not thousands, of subcontractors. And all those subcontractors need to have insurance. They need to have their billing information. They need to have their contact information. They need to know when their trades need to be on the site. Again, that was partially paper, partially software, partially in-person meetings. We started with them just simply by automating their meeting notes. And that's been a really, that was literally the biggest roadblock to them, was just like somebody was sitting there spending hours figuring out what was said in meetings, figuring out who had to do what next and when that task needed to be done by. And then it was all uploaded either by or to email or to project management software, what have you. And we just were able to a meeting was recorded much like this on Zoom. AI takes it, summarizes it. The person in charge looks at that summary and goes, yep, okay, cool. And then it gets emailed off. And then updated. And then the project management and the dashboards get updated. So that's the coolest thing about where I see AI and automation for businesses in 2024 is like, I don't care if you're a luxury fishing lodge. I don't care if you're construction. Like those things could be, they're business-wise diametrically opposed. But yet everybody has a problem with, there's a manual process in what makes you money. There's a system that doesn't talk to one another. And that slows people down, or it slows the flow of work through a company and the ability for that company to make money. So all AI and automation does is goes to what is that tedious, what is that boring, what is that low value task? And then allows you to like do away with it. A computer can do it. And then people can do higher value, more creative stuff.
For sure. But like as of right now, are you pure SaaS, like SaaS plus agency? Like, you know, what does your pricing structure look like?
Yeah. So I have a product called AI Maximizer. So AI Maximizer is just how does a mid-market company get started with AI and automation? Because that's always the biggest thing, right? Like, okay, this is cool. I futzed around with ChatGPT one night. That's nice. Like, what do I do now? And what it is a process, 4 to 6 weeks. We do some customer interviews. We have some, process and questions that we ask internally. We get, hey, here's 5 to 10 projects. Here's the ROI of each of those. Here's the cost of doing them with us or with somebody else. Like, here's your approximate. Here's the stuff, in order of we would do it based on your strategic priorities. And you have that in 4 weeks. And so now you suddenly have clarity on, well, this is how I can use AI and automation. This is why I would, here's my ROI. And this is the plan of the clarity of the step-by-step of what's going to happen to, go forward. And then you want to use us. Hey, we'll build it for you. We'll select the software for you. We'll train it for you. The reoccurring is then we have playbooks that we'll use over and over and over again. I call them like, they're kind of micro SaaS tools, for lack of a better term, that we package together and we go, okay, here you go. $25,000 a month now, but guess what? You made $1 million more because you could accept 10 more customers that month. And that applies to a SaaS company. Our targets are, real estate companies, property development and property management, retail, and then vertical market SaaS. Those are kind of the three buckets we play in. And what I think is interesting is like when you can make this stuff very practical, you're often just giving people back time that was wasted on terrible work, boring, tedious, low value. And yet a lot of the times you're paying these people a lot of money. Like a one property development client, their senior analyst who earns, over $150,000 a year is spending 8 hours of every 2 weeks getting 10 to 11 senior managers in a room. So he's literally kind of an assistant. Like he's just like, are you available? Hey, CEO, are you available at 11 a.m. on next Thursday? Or I should say CEO's assistant. And I was like, that's taking you 8 hours every 2 weeks. And he's like, yeah. I was like, okay, we're going to automate that for you. Because that guy's really expensive. He's also really talented. And he's sitting on email and a calendar and doing something that an exec assistant should do. I was like, okay, these are the tools that once you build that playbook, you can just deploy over and over and over again. So that's the business model. Where I see it going is you start to bundle these playbooks together. I also think we are in for a I'll call it the great unbundling of SaaS over the next few years. I think companies have way overspent on software as a service for the past 10 years. The account-based model of, you know, selling on seats, selling on, selling, you know, big teams for annual contracts worth 50 to 100K. And, you know, you've got an account manager and a business development person and a technical person, and the sales cycle's 8 to 12 months. And you're trying to just get people on demos, and like, it's just fucking broken. Like, so we've got to unbundle that and give people little slices of services that they themselves can put together into something that might create the same ACV, but is a lot easier for the company to make a decision on. I think other than, you know, data infrastructure or buying, you know, something that's critically important for the infrastructure of a company and a software, you know, like, I don't know, buying fucking Workday or like some marketing automation or HubSpot or some CRM, and companies paying like millions of dollars a month for this, or 150 grand a month for this. It's like, no, that world is done.
For sure. So I guess, like, you know, 2024 is around the corner. So in terms of your goals, I mean, I don't even know if you can share in terms of revenue or customers, like, what are you looking to get to from where you're at now to 1 year from now?
I won't give exact numbers, but we're looking into it being in the hundreds of customers in our SaaS, and that being 80% of revenue, 20% of revenue being professional services. And the professional services obviously feeds the AI Maximizer, feeds the recurring business. And they're being in the recurring business around, the goal is 12 to 15 a month. So, and we're kind of already doing that. So it's kind of keeping what we're doing and then expanding with the companies that we're in. And then eventually, you know, the goal is, these are like Vista Equity Partners. These are playbooks that you deploy, you refine. We partner with a private equity group, or we create our own private equity group, and we buy businesses and use these proven playbooks to tune them up. Like, that's the ultimate vision, because I think I look at this stuff and I see the impact that it has day to day on people, on their ability to level up in their career, level up in their thinking. Also just not work as much. Like, nobody wants to be doing expense reports at 7 p.m. Like, you know, if we can do away with that and they go be with their kids, awesome, let's do that. I don't know a CEO who wouldn't want that. So that's the idea, is just the clients that we currently have, deepening our relationships with them, because I'm ultimately looking for companies I can partner with their leadership teams over the long term. This isn't, you know, churn and burn. This is like, no, how do we take you from making 150 million a year to 1.5 billion over the next 4 years? That kind of thing.
For sure. But I guess, like, what do you think is the biggest obstacle is in the way from where you're at now to getting these hundreds of customers next year?
It will be buying back my time. So as a leader, not being continuously looking for people, resources, and processes to make my own time more highly leveraged. The bottleneck in any business growth is usually one of two things. The offering sucks and does not fit the product does not fit the market's actual need. So people come up with these wonderful ideas and they're like, oh, like, it's just a cool idea, and I did that for years. And that's one. Or the second is the bottleneck of growth is the leader of the company is wasting time on things that they don't give them energy, or they were once good at and provided a lot of value, but now that the company is of a different size and scale, they have to give to other people to do, or machines to do, in my case, machines to do. So those are the two biggest challenges, is like, do our offerings fit the needs of our customer base? And is that offering so resonant that it would be stupid to say no to? And secondly, am I like, I'm looking at my week and I'm going, there is no reason I should be doing that demo anymore. There should be an SOP in place. There should be a highly trained person who's actually better at it than I am, and that gives them more energy. Like, I love sales, but like, I've hired people where I'm like, wow, you really like sales. Like, damn, this is your thing. Like, let them go do that.
So, like, are you still doing demos and sales calls now, or have you?
Yeah. So I've automated the company to a point where when somebody's talking to me, they're highly qualified. Like, they're ready to buy within the next literally weeks. They understand our offering. They understand the biggest thing for me is, if you want to get into AI and automation, have a clear picture of where your company is going. because I can't, we could have the coolest solutions in the world. But if you're like, I don't see how that makes me more of whatever strategically important to me. It's like, well, forget it. We've all wasted our time here. So they have a clear picture of who they are and where they're going. They are of a good values fit for us in the sense of like, I only work with people that are do what they say they're going to do, are excited about their life and their work. Like I've had shitty ass clients for a lot of my career. I'm like, no, I'm done. No, not anymore. I want them to be ready, or sorry, they've made the decision internally that they're going to be spending at least $250,000 or more on AI and automation efforts in the next 3 months, or within the calendar year or procurement, whatever their procurement cycle is. But it's clear like, hey, I like this. I'm excited about it. I understand who I am and where I'm going, and I'm ready to buy. And if you're not, I'm not talking to you. And that's fine. Like, it's like you're on a drip campaign. You're there's other resources you go to. I could also, hey, if you're not ready and you really just want to like shoot the shit, like I'm happy to send you to some other people. But that's the automate, like that's the sales process. The team is very small. Like it doesn't need to be large because it's like, well, we've got the processes laid out. We've got the what is low value is SOP'd and is automated. What is of strategic importance, creative energy giving is given to people. And then the people that are on the team are wanting to be there, are maybe not full-time or moving into full-time. And I've kept the team intentionally small because it's like, this is the Navy SEALs. This isn't, you know, this isn't Salesforce. This isn't the Army.
Right. So I guess like, what would you say has been like the best channel for you for client acquisition? Has that been LinkedIn or have you run ads, cold email? Like how have you grown this business in such a short
word of mouth? Do good work. Yeah. I don't have a website.
So you started somewhere, right? So
yeah. Calling people.
Cold calling.
Yeah. Well, cold calling, email. Hey, this is what I think I can do. I think these are some problems in your business. These are problems I know of in your industry. This is how others are solving them. That starts a conversation. Like I said, I went back to spending a lot of time mostly on like, what does the market actually need and want? I care less about like, and I would rather have a conversation about like, where is that person today? Understanding their psychology, understanding where their budget, what their budget is. And then we can move into like, oh yeah, here's an offering. You have 50 of those conversations of like, what is it you're looking for? What's the result that you want? What does that feel like? How are you going to measure progress? What is it that you're stymied by? What are the questions you have? What are the fears that you have? You have 50 of those conversations like and you're semi-decent at listening. You can craft an offer very quickly out of 10 or 12 of those conversations where you're like, oh, okay, here's the pattern. All right. Yeah. Like that's the problem. So literally the reason we don't have a website is like, I haven't needed one yet. There'll be a point, of course, when it's like, oh, hey, but right now it's all been word of mouth, which is, I think, the ultimate arbiter of, oh, this offering is actually working. Like I can get on the phone with somebody, show them a deck, show them our previous work. They can talk to a customer if they want. I don't really even care, but it's like, oh yeah. Oh no. Cool. We love this. This is exactly what I needed. And when you're on a point of a second conversation in and they're talking about what's really bugging them about their business. And I'm usually talking to a board, a CEO, a head of a business unit. Like we're having a strategic discussion. I'm very rarely talking to somebody mid-level or low. That's not to say that's a problem. It's just, that's where it's at right now.
Right, right.
When you start to hear them talk about their problems and then you show them a slide deck that you created before the meeting, and it's actually like nailing the problems that they're talking about, unbeknownst to them, and they think it's like you created it while you were talking, that's where you're like, oh, okay, cool, I got fit. Awesome. But what I think the channel, to answer your question, going forward will be conversations like this, just talking to an audience and being like, hey, this is what we're up to. This is where we're going. Are you excited by that? Cool. Let's chat. Like, let's do something. Let's add, like, let me add value and expertise to your business. That's it.
Right. For sure. So what would you say is like the one biggest piece of advice that you wish you knew before you started this company?
Play a game that you really want, you enjoy playing. So a trap I fell into early in my career was I was a management consultant. So I had a management, I sorry, back up. Went to university, got a degree in history and sociology. I worked for the Olympics, which came to Vancouver in 2010. Had a really interesting, it was a super interesting experience. I took a year off. I got Shanghai'd into working for a SaaS company. It was the worst startup in the world. It was in Cambridge. And I basically learned everything you shouldn't do in a SaaS startup. I then started my own consulting group. I worked, you know, I did 1,400 engagements over 5 years. Oh, 4.5 years, and actually started Strategy Box because I needed the product, the data platform at that consulting company. And then I did Strategy Box. And I saw a lot of what not to do. I saw a lot of, you know, companies that were 250, 500 million, 2 billion in revenue yearly. I would meet with their boards. I would get flown around first class. Like I was winning, quote unquote. And it was... I saw people playing games, and I mean games in the sense of, you know, they had gotten to 60 years old, they had reached the pinnacle, like them being the CEO or the board or the investor or their whatever, COO, whatever the job is, very high status job. And I could tell they really didn't like their lives. Like it was just sad. Like, and I also played the same game. Like I earned a lot of money. I had this high status job. I was looked at as the expert in the room, which for your ego is a great thing. And I was like, this sucks. I wasn't happy. And even when I did Strategy Box, I held on way too long for that, at that company trying to make it work. And it was like pushing a wet noodle up a hill for 7 years, taught me a lot of lessons, taught me a lot of things that I now use today. So I'm very grateful for the experience. But I played games that I didn't enjoy playing. And if I won, I didn't really enjoy winning. So it was like my biggest piece of advice is always just like, do something you just inherently like, oh, this is fun. I just enjoy this. Like, I don't know what it is. It's an X factor, but I just enjoy this. And it is okay to go try 10 things and 7 or 8 of them be utter disasters, one being middling and one experience being awesome. You go, okay, cool. I'll just do one more. And I think I talked to a lot of young people earlier on in their careers, and they're so afraid of, like, I went and backpacked in Asia, in mainland China. I lived in mainland China for a year when I was 26. I lived on 35 grand. And the experiences, the people I met, the lessons that I learned, I still draw on that today. But I also, it was like fucking terrifying to quit a job when you work for the Olympic and go out and do something, but I was miserable. So I was like, okay, I got to go do something else. So that's my biggest thing is just like, go try a bunch of stuff, see what resonates and learn a little bit every time. And then play a game that you ultimately want to win. Like I look at a lot of venture-backed SaaS companies and I go, you know, I'll talk to the CEOs or I'll talk to their investors and I go, who's having fun here? I don't think any of you. Like this is just misery. Like, what are you all doing?
For sure. So, I mean, yeah, that's really good advice. So if somebody watching this wanted to reach out to you, do you mind sharing the best way to get in contact with you?
Yeah, Aaron@dasanalytics.com. You can also sign up. I do a weekly at das-services.com. You can sign up to CEO Sundays. So every week I do kind of two thoughts on how to make more and how to live, how to have more fulfilling work.
Awesome. Well, Aaron, thank you so much for your time. We're rooting for you for a very successful 2024. And yeah, it was a pleasure chatting with you.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you. All right. Bye.
Bye, Dan.